RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Dr. Muriel Newman established the New Zealand Centre for Political Research as a public policy think tank in 2005, after 9 years as a Member of Parliament. She's also a former Chamber of Commerce President with a background in business and education. And Muriel is back on RCR. Current state of the economy, cost of living crisis, government's approach, defeat of Tamana Otiwa in local government policy, etc., covered in a piece she's written, which is up on the New Zealand Centre for Political Research, called Moving Ahead. And Muriel is with us again. Morning, Muriel. Thanks for coming on again.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Moving ahead. Okay. What do you mean by moving ahead? On what fronts?
Well, when you think about the state of our economy and the mess that the Labor government left it in, it's a real challenge for the new coalition to actually, you know, get things right so that the country can start to perform again. And, you know, we see it all the time, don't we, in closed shops and, you know, not so many people in the streets anymore, not so much stock in the shops. You know, it's a real tough time that people are going through now. And while the economic signs are starting to look up, it's still a mess that the country got into.
Yeah, many argue that there was an unnecessary mess to get into. It was complete overreach, overreaction. It showed a lack of, well, nous, actually, and any understanding of history and where money comes from. Where do you want to start?
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, you have to look at the, you know, just the printing of money that went on during the COVID period and the spending of money and the borrowing. You know, it was just, to start with, I think it was all probably quite reasonable. You know, it was an unknown situation, wasn't it? And everybody was quite afraid of what the future would hold. And so some of it, I think, was quite justified at the very beginning. But then it just got completely out of control. And, you know, we're still picking up the pieces now.
Here's a question. Love to get your answer on this. Okay, I guess they thought they were doing the right thing, but what they've effectively done is put us behind. They have, well, you know, Winston Peters, even Luxon, have used quite firm words like basket case and things like that, talking about the economy. They left it in a terrible shape. Okay, I never voted them in. But you can't go in and almost destroy the economy of a country and get away with it, can you? I mean, there has to be some consequence for the decision-making that has gone on, that has been so costly and affected many lives. I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a real, you know, million-dollar question, isn't it? Because on so many fronts, the decisions that were made by Jacinda Ardern and her team were dreadful. And yet, you know, they swan off and she gets, you know, knighted and, you know, it's just, and they get plum jobs. It's like you say, there is no accountability for, you know, the destruction that they caused. I mean, you know, to be honest, most governments, you know, they might stuff up, right? But they don't leave things in a monumental mess, you know. So I think we were just very unlucky with the, you know, events of history and the incompetence of the group that were in charge. It was, you know, the job was way too big for them. They didn't get good advice. They bumbled on and, you know, borrow and spend, you know, forget about the consequences. And, you know, here we are now. And it's going to take years, isn't it, to be able to get ourselves back on track. And, you know, I tell you one other thing that none of us realised, and this was their opening of the floodgates to immigration. You know, I can remember when the first sort of immigration figures came out that showed immigration had risen. And it hadn't just risen by, you know, 10 or 20,000. It was like 100,000. I mean, everybody was taken aback by the scale of what had gone on. None of us were really aware of what was happening. And, of course, when you've got an economy in trouble and interest rates are high and you've got inflation going through the roof, when you add another 100,000 people, into an economy, it's just going to make things so much worse. So it was on so many fronts that they stuffed up. And yes, there are don't seem to be consequences, and that's wrong. I don't know what the answer is, though. It's a real tough question.
Well, I want to come for their assets. Good point you make on immigration, because that's also been used as a way of buffering up the GDP, so the perception isn't so bad. So even when everyone knows we're having a per capita recession, which means everyone's poorer, you can point to a very limited dip in GDP, and then you can claim that the economy's not doing so bad. So that's been used by both sides, hasn't it, to kind of kick the can down the road, pumping the GDP, but at the same time, and it takes a while before people can realise, the per capita GDP is what takes the hit.
I think you're right. And I at the time, I surmised that was an election strategy because, you know, it happened in that election year. It was done, as I say, very quietly. And then all of a sudden, by the time of the election, the numbers were actually looking quite good. But you knew that behind the scenes, it was going to be a disaster. So, yes, I think that it was all about trying to, you know, make things look the best so they could win the election again. And fortunately, it didn't work.
In terms of the media, I think you might have just touched on that before indirectly anyway. So given the latest poll results, you might want to talk to the specific numbers, but basically the coalition government has a majority of popularity at the moment out there. But there has been a concerted effort, hasn't there, in mainstream media, seems to me anyway, to play down, demonise, make big controversies out of, you know, a storm in the teacup kind of approach to take down to a certain extent the popularity of this coalition government. But it doesn't seem to have worked.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think the media are doing their best to try and scuttle the government. They, you know, like you say, I'm talking the mainstream media, of course, and, you know, you just have to watch Television New Zealand news at, you know, 6 o'clock. And it's like, you know, what can they do to try and bring down the government tonight? You know, it's almost like a game because it's so disingenuous what they're doing, and it's wrong. But I think what's happened is that people are doing what we're doing, which is essentially ignoring them now. You know, it's just it's propaganda through and through. And occasionally you get a real news item and you think, God, this is what it used to be like all the time. You know, it's just ridiculous what's happened to the mainstream media. Some I think, are starting to get the message and are starting to become more balanced. But there are some that, you know, you just think there's no hope for them. Unless they get a new board, you know, and you wonder when, with the state-owned media, why that hasn't happened already.
Yeah, well, I guess new people are put on the boards, but it takes time, doesn't it, to sort of roll over the top with your kind of people. So what are the standouts? There are poll results. Also, there's the deficit, which is huge, eye-watering, 42.5% of GDP, though many say that in terms of global proportion to GDP, debt to GDP, is not too bad. But, I mean, it's a lot, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest about that. Also, there's the cutting of public service jobs. Do you think that's gone far enough? There are the fast-track approvals. And then, of course, there is Te Mana o Te Wai. Do you want to speak to some of those?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you look at the government books, what it tells you is that the legacy of Labor lives on. I mean, the government, in spite of the constraints that they're trying to bring in, is still spending more than they're getting in tax revenue. And that can't go on, clearly. And what it tells you is that in spite of talking tough, they haven't done enough. And, you know, you mentioned public service numbers. I mean, that is, in a way, is a flag for what's happening, because if you go back to 2017, there were the equivalent of around 47,000 full-time public servants. And when Labor left office, the numbers had blown out to 66,000. You know, when you look at the difference between those two numbers, it really is eye-watering. You know, 19,000 extra staff doing what? Yeah. And, you know, when they talk about cutting back the public service, you know, and there's all these wails and sort of, you know, this protest action going on about how bad it is, and then you actually find out that about 2,000 people have lost their jobs, not 19,000. So really, I think that, you know, the government is talking tough, but I think they really do need to do a lot more. They have to restrain the spending. And when you look at all the government programs, I mean, for goodness sake, and they've talked about it, but I don't think they're doing enough. There'll be so many programs that are really expensive where the actual results of what is being delivered will be minimal. And they could be, you know, cancelled without anybody apart from those involved in the programs themselves knowing, you know, that there's been any loss, if you know what I mean. And so I think they really have to knuckle down and do better. And so I think those figures are just a warning to them that they might, you know, their thinking might be right, but they are certainly not doing well enough for the country at the moment.
Would you say they're not pushing hard enough? I mean, there's the whole transgender women in sport issue, or transgender women in sport, however you want to name it. There seems to be now a bit of an awareness of that as an issue at government level. There's all these, as you say, funding streams for things that no one would ever notice if they were gone. Is it time, do you think, Muriel, when people talk about local government, you know, that they need to stick to their knitting, they need to stick to the pipes and the infrastructure projects that, you know, make life tolerable. Is it time for central government to stick to its knitting? And if it did, what would that knitting be, do you think?
Actually, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? Because I think you're right. I think that's what the public would like them to do, is to, you know, stop all these flights of fancy that lead to all sorts of bizarre outcomes and just do the basic things right. And, you know, for example, in welfare, make sure that people who've been on there for too long are helped into a job. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science, a lot of this stuff, but it does need perseverance and dedication, and it needs to get the staffing right, and it needs to have the programs right. But the end result would be good benefits for everybody concerned, if you know what I mean. So if they stopped all this peripheral stuff and just focused on the basics, I think we would start to see real improvement in this country.
That sounds like something to campaign on. Maybe in a year and a bit.
Yes, that's right. No, look, it's a real challenge that the government has, because there are these issues, these deeply concerning issues, you know, like you just mentioned, the transgender, like a lot of the race stuff. These are deeply concerning matters that, you know, people voted for the coalition to fix. And it's become very obvious that they try and fix them, right, by bringing in, you know, sending out a memo to all the public service or making a decree on something. And blow me down, instead of everybody doing what they've been asked to do, they ignore it. And so you've got the coalition who is, instead of just being able to do something once and have it fixed and then move on to the next thing, they're having to go back and revisit some of the stuff time and time again, because there are so many activists now within our institutions that are pushing agendas that really belong to the Labor government or former Labor government, that, you know, it's stopping these guys from getting on with their job. And that is a real problem that they've got.
In your piece, Moving Ahead, you talk energy as well, and Brian Leyland is mentioned there, and many of our listeners will know who he is. One thing I did notice in the campaigning for the last election, Christopher Luxon said he would be fixated with net zero. So I'm pretty sure that was his quote. So as Lindsay Perigo would say, we're dealing with a uniparty, really, aren't we? They're pretty well the same, no matter what, in the end.
Well, you know, that was one of the huge disappointments of the election, that there was not one party that campaigned in terms of getting rid of that nonsense. You know, I mean, it's a political agenda that's being driven by the left, net zero, and you've got all these conservative politicians who've bought into it. They need to have a real rethink about what they're actually doing to the country. Because while it was all talk a few years ago, you know, and promises, that was one thing. But right now, what they're doing, they're pushing up power prices, they're pushing up the price of petrol, all of the constraints that they're bringing in under the net zero agenda is now affecting every New Zealander. And it's putting costs onto all the products we buy in this country. And it's just ridiculous. It's like self-sacrifice for nothing. Because whatever we do under that banner of net zero is not going to make one iota of difference to anything, apart from the governments being able to beat their chest and say, weren't we clever? Well, they're not clever. They're absolutely stupid to be so obsessed with this political agenda.
And that extends to water. And I think I've got it right, because we've talked about this before on this program, that the government has now intervened into the Otago City Council's adoption of a freshwater plan that they were going ahead with, even though it was clear that the councils didn't have to, and more than one council, obviously, continue work on Te Mana o Te Wā because of government changes coming. They were notified, but they were pushing on. Obviously, that has been kind of thwarted now, but that shows you what you're dealing with, this entrenched sort of mindset to plough on with the previous government's approach.
I know, it's shocking, really. So yes, it's not just central government, it's local government as well. And I think it's a lot of councils throughout the country where they're pouring, you know, essentially millions of dollars into these stupid schemes. And I was very pleased that the government made it clear to everybody, because, you know, local government has gone completely off the rails. And in many parts of the country, it's been completely captured by iwi interests. And that is a real, real concern for the country. Because, you know, what you've got on a lot of these councils, you've got these advisory groups of local iwi, you've got Maori wards, you've got councillors who are now afraid to speak their mind and make a decision in the best interests of their community, because they're afraid of the backlash. And so you've got councils that can no longer do the best for their communities. They're tied into doing whatever it is that iwi want. And this whole fresh water agenda is a part of that. And so, you know, it's very timely that the government has finally pulled the plug on it. And I just hope that they take these matters seriously and they realise that, you know, they have to step in directly. Look, a lot of it comes back, to be honest, to the need to get rid of the four well-beings. Now, they've signalled they're going to do that. They're going to bring local government back on track to deal with the basics, take away their ability to, you know, have to consider the economic, the cultural, the social, and what's the other one, the environmental concerns about everything, every decision they make, and they're just going to allow them to focus back on their basics. And I think, you know, that law change can't come quickly enough, and they're going to have a real look at what's going on in local government. I mean, you know, there was that case down in, isn't it, Gore, where, you know, the council declared their whole community is of interest to Maori, is of significance to Maori. Yep. And so, you know, anybody wanting to do anything in that community, no matter how small, theoretically, will have to consult with all the iwi in the area. I mean, it's just complete and utter madness. And, you know, I heard the other day, and I haven't had a chance to properly look into it, but I heard Heather Du Plessis Allen on Newstalk ZB talking about how the fact that iwi had a say on the future of the chateau and the ski fields is why no lease has been let for the chateau and why it's actually costing taxpayers $2 million a year in upkeep and it's quietly falling to bits.
Yeah.
And why the other ski field was never able to operate this year. And it's because they have decided that, no, they don't want a long lease. They want short leases, presumably, so that they can get more of the action.
Jack the money.
Yeah, it's just terrible. And so what's happened is that there's been this enormous push to give iwi all this power.
Wait on, Muriel. Yeah. That's not the fault of Maori, though, is it? I mean, if I was Maori iwi and they were offering this to me, I'd think, okay, schmucks, I'll take it. If you're going to be that dumb, I'll take it. It's your problem. So we can't really blame. Wouldn't you say?
I think that the problem is they've been pushing hard for more control and the weak politicians have given it to them.
Yeah,
I don't think you can take the blame away from them, but they're the ones who've been pushing really hard to be able to control all this stuff, and they've succeeded, probably beyond their wildest dreams.
Well, that's the point I'm making. If you're that weak and you sign up for the job and you're that weak, well, you know, the voters who voted them in need to take a long, hard look at themselves and why they voted for that person. And then if the argument is, well, the turnout's too low, no one pays any attention anyway, well, that's too bad in the end, isn't it, under democracy?
Yeah, well, I think we just need to get real now. We need to see what's actually happening, be aware of it, and realise, you know, we've got local body elections are coming up next year. And, you know, before we know it, it'll be the next general election, for goodness sake.
Yeah, well, that's not that far away. No.
I know. No. It's quite frightening the way these days rush by. But I think that, you know, everybody needs to take a long, hard look at where, you know, democracy has got at local level and central government level. And we need to make really good decisions and get good people into the jobs, you know, people who can stand up and make courageous decisions. And that seems to me to have been lacking in some instances. You know, people are very courageous until they're, you know, faced with a difficult situation and then they just back down. And that's not what you need. You need to have people who will stand by their convictions.
Well, you wonder why people get into it if it's not for that. I mean, I'm sure you'd be the sort of person who would say, okay, give me a big problem. Nothing more than I like dealing with a big problem. Lay it on me. Let's go. Right.
Well, I'm not sure if you'd bring it on if you could avoid it, but the reality is that when you are confronted with a big problem, you have to stand by your principles.
Yeah,
and you know that's a part of it. But I think that, you know, too many people who, you know, probably people say to them, you know, why don't you put your name forward, you know, for the council or whatever, and they don't think it through and they don't understand how tough it can be, and you know, that is in part to do with, you know, how we make our local democracy work. And, you know, so I think we can probably do better in some instances. In fact, it was interesting. I saw an article or a headline to an article the other day, which is, you know, how come we've got Tory whānau, you know, in Wellington as the mayor? And, of course, it wasn't because people desperately wanted her. It was the STV voting system.
Yeah.
And so,
right.
You know, you have to look at some of this stuff, don't you, and think, well, you know, is it actually delivering good outcomes or do we actually have to change it?
Well, now's the time maybe that all of that is up for grabs. The thinking on that needs to be done now, because can you see, okay, big picture, our way of governing ourselves improving in any way or just degrading from here on in? What do you think?
Oh, look, I think it comes back to what you said, that, you know, we have to learn to stick to our knitting. If we learn to stick to our knitting, then I think it's manageable. But if you try for government at every level to be all things to all people, it's just going to fail, isn't it? It's too big a job. And so I think that's what we have to do better, is we have to define what the limits are, what we expect, and then, you know, allow the freedom for everyone else to get on and do everything else, if you know what I mean, within the constraints that are set by central government or local government.
But I think they used to work well, it seems.
What's that, sorry?
They used to work well, maybe not well, but it seems better than they do now. Yeah. Maybe that's just rose-tinted. I'm just looking ahead to the next election. So after a period of time, of course, people start saying, well, you can't blame the last government for this anymore. That was ages ago. It's you now. What are you going to do about it? And they're probably going to get hit with that next election campaign. So, you know, what does a coalition government like this do in the meantime? What, everything they can to minimise the bad numbers? Is that the best strategy to go into another election?
I think it's really important that they crack the economy, you know, that they get the economy going. That obviously is Christopher Luxon's focus. And, you know, he is very dogged on that. He's trying to do trade deals. He's trying to get businesses, you know, back operating and doing well. You know, I'm sure there's a lot more stuff they can do, and they've got to take away all the handbrakes. You know, the regulation or over-regulation in this country is frightening. And, you know, we were thinking the other day, you know, how they brought in this fast-track legislation.
Yep.
They need to bring it in for ordinary people as well. You know, you just think of all the stuff that people would want to do if they could. Now, obviously, there's got to be some constraints. We all agree with that. But it's all got to ridiculous proportions in everything in New Zealand now. And so, you know, somehow, and I don't know what the answer is, perhaps David Seymour's new regulations review authority is going to work miracles. I don't know. But something has to give, I think, and you've got to free up people to be able to get on and do stuff, make a better living for themselves and their families, and have aspirations again. You know, we've forgotten about all that stuff. We've been so beaten down, I reckon.
Well, the birth rate's not even allowing us to do that anymore. We're 1.5 per woman now. You know, so we're not replacing the family unit anymore.
And you've got to wonder why that is. I mean, there's a whole lot of deep-seated reasons for that as well, why people don't want to have bigger families, you know. And
well, wouldn't we be funding? I mean, other countries, Hungary's done this. Russia's done this. Have babies. We'll pay you for it, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I look, again, this is just one of those issues that has to be addressed properly.
Well, that's an important one, because a generation will be saddled with an unaffordable bill at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've been doing a bit of work with Roger Douglas, and, you know, he's been looking at ways to do better in terms of funding superannuation and health in the future. And he's got a brilliant plan, you know, where you actually take the money you'd pay in tax and you put it into your own super and health schemes.
Yeah,
there's some left over for the government, but, and then of course it grows by compound interest. And so by the time someone retires after 40 years, you know, they've got $4 million in their super account. And, you know, so there are alternative ways of dealing with a lot of these problems. And I think we need some good blue sky thinking. But to be able to do that, you've actually got to get out of the quagmire. And I think that's what this government is working very hard to do.
Well, most people pay far more tax than they ever use in resources paid for by tax. I know with my medical interventions, I calculated them at less than $20,000, yet I've probably paid over $1 million in tax over the time. So it's not as if we're getting incredible deals.
No, that's right. And so, you know, Roger's view, Sir Roger's view is simply that, you know, you are able to use your tax money to benefit yourself and your family.
Yeah.
And obviously the country, because you're no longer the big burden on the health system that you are if you all put it into the consolidated fund and they fund it through that way. But, you know, it makes sense. His numbers make sense. And whether anyone will pick it up, I don't know. But it's an alternative way of doing things. You look at Singapore, it basically uses that. And it's gone from being a very, very poor country to being one of the richest in the world.
It's incredible.
You know, I know there's other issues. Mm. I know there's issues. But on these particular matters, it's been brilliant for the country.
And well, they know how to look after themselves, right? They know how to look after themselves. They're actually looking after themselves.
That's right. Yep, they are. And here, you know, that we don't have that focus, do we? And I think it should change.
All right, if people want to move, I'm conflating the title of your piece with the with an action here. If people want to read the Moving Ahead piece, it's at the New Zealand Centre for Political Research. It's authored by Dr. Muriel Newman, published on the 19th of October. Fascinating piece, Muriel. Hopefully some politicians, other politicians and interested parties will read it, because it really lays out kind of the, if you join the dots, the sort of roadmap of how we've got to where we are, but definitely for the next election where it's heading. So people can go there. And it's always good to chat with you, Muriel. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. I really enjoy it as well. So thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.